when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello, and welcome to another The New Abnormal special bonus episode, and we're so excited to have you. Zerlina Maxwell is the host of The Zerlina Show on Peacock TV. She's also the co-host of Signal Boost on Sirius XM and the author of The End of White Politics.
First, let's talk about The End of White Politics, because just tell our listeners a little bit about that book and why you decided to write it.
Well, it's so funny to sit here now and think about why I decided to write The End of White Politics, because I didn't anticipate that some of the things I was talking about in the book would happen so quickly.
Yeah.
But if I could take you back to Politicon, which I'm not sure if you've been to Politicon.
I've never been, but I've heard.
A little bit of a hot mess. It's sort of like it's like Comic-Con for political nerds or cable news pundits. It's very odd bunch. You know, Dennis Rodman and Ann Coulter in the same room. James Carville's over there. You're like, why is this happening? And so I went to Politicon and I was on a panel which was like, what now, liberals? And it was in 2018, before the midterms, before the Mueller report came out, all of that. And it was like, you know, progressives who supported Bernie, a couple Hillary folks, Marcos Melitzas was on the panel. Like, it was a good cross-section of people on the left sort of unpacking why we lost in 2016.
Yeah.
But it turned into a complete dumpster fire when I made the point to one of the Bernie Sanders supporters that if he were to run again in 2020, which he did, he was going to need to improve his messaging towards communities of color, specifically how he engages Black women, because Black women are the base of the Democratic Party and you can't win without us. And I made that point, which now it seems like, yeah, everybody can agree with that.
Conventional wisdom.
After what we just watched. But then I guess it was something they didn't want to hear. So I got like booed it was a little dramatic, right? And I realized, it was luck, right? A book editor, Krishan Trotman, was in the audience from Hachette. She was like, you should write this book. This is a book. You have something to say about the left. What just happened? There's a lot there. And so I really just took that sort of moment and used it as, a jumping off point to sort of speak to my people on the left and really get them to understand that the demographics in America are shifting towards a reality where white voters are going to be a minority of the electorate. And that's not true yet, but in a lot of places, because of the pluralities and in some cases, like in Texas, the majorities that people of color and the coalitions, they can create, they can win elections. In hindsight, I was on to something.
Oh, yeah.
because we just witnessed the 2020 elections, where I didn't anticipate we were going to flip Georgia so quickly. I knew that was possible. I talk about Stacey Abrams and her playbook that she ran in her gubernatorial race by engaging all different swaths of the electorate and going directly to voters of color and talking specifically about identity and policy solutions for those communities, understanding that race is a factor and gender is a factor. And I just think that now it seems like I was psychic or something, but really I was just saying a thing that seemed to be an obvious point that somebody needed to say. And I think Republicans understand this. That's one of the reasons why they try to suppress voters of color. They try to pack power in the court system. You know, they understand the demographic shifts in a way that I feel like Democrats needed to.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting to me that Republicans seem to understand this better, even though their want is nefarious, than Democrats. I mean, it's just sort of shocking to me.
It is very shocking to me.
Talk to me about what you see in the cabinet. Like, I'm upset. I don't quite understand why Marcia Fudge shouldn't be the ag secretary and instead should go to HUD. Like, are you seeing, I feel like the Biden administration needs to do more to put Black women in his cabinet?
Well, I think, so far the picks have made a lot of sense. I try not to be too cynical about it. I think, at the end of the day, all the picks have one thing in common. They have a good relationship with Joe Biden.
Right.
So I think, you know, that may be that one thing at the end of the list of, you know, check marks that he's trying to go through to select these folks. I think that's the one that matters the most. It's weighted the most.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, groups are being like the NAACP and the Urban League, you know, they're coming out and they're being outspoken about the fact that they want to be more directly consulted about some of these picks. Now, it looks like it's like family food fighting. But honestly, what I found the most interesting about the last week was that the Biden campaign, you know, they have been talking to civil rights groups. It just wasn't the NAACP and the National Urban League. It was Color of Change and other organizations that are newer and have younger leadership.
Which is actually good, right?
Which is good. So look, I think at the end of the day, I think the way it's going to shake out is like, we're going to like some of these picks and we're going to not like some of these picks, and we're going to have to work within sort of that dynamic, which is a lot better than the last 4 years, certainly. But at the same time, I mean, I think like Marcia Fudge he can put her anywhere and she will do an excellent job.
Right. That's true.
And so I do see why people are like, well, why would you put the same person, white man, in charge of the department he was in charge of before?
And he oversaw
some things that weren't
maybe
great.
Controversial. Yeah,
that whole Shirley Sherrod situation was not great. But at the same time, it's like, again, it goes back to who Biden knows well and who he feels comfortable in those roles. And so, I think I'm just going to defer to his judgment on that.
Yeah.
At this point, because there's no pick that he's picked that I'm like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, like,
no,
that's going to ruin it.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's pretty good.
And he's not picking, like, Fox News contributors or...
his kids.
Yeah. I mean, look, the bar is low. but certainly he's surpassing it, you know, in leaps and bounds. And I think the fact that we can even sort of on a substantive level be like, well, this person could be better for reasons X, Y, Z. I mean, we're already doing a lot better than we were just a couple weeks ago.
It's certainly true. So you have a radio show, which I've been on, full disclosure, and like a lot. And you also have a television program, which I've also been on, full disclosure, and really enjoy. First of all, how do you do, like, I always think I do a lot, but you do a lot.
I think about this on a daily basis. How do I do it? I stick to a schedule.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can do it. And I still sometimes feel like I'm not doing either thing to the best of my ability because I'm tired. But that's my goal every day is to, like, you know, I have two major things to accomplish and, you know, it's almost like an athlete.
Yeah.
I look at it like both things require different parts of my brain and my sort of spirit. So each one requires different prep. Like in the morning, I sit outside on the porch. I look at the sun coming up because it's a morning show. So
yeah.
It's like when the sun starts coming up, I have some caffeine. I read my AP Morning Wire. Then I go through the New York Times. Like I do, like I have my like little rituals. And then in the afternoon, it is a little tough because it starts at 7 a.m. and it ends at 7 p.m.
Yeah, that's
so it's like, so it's sort of like the beginning and at the end. So that's been fun. But what I do is I sort of like have a little routine. I work out. I sort of put on some good music. I have to do my own hair and makeup because that's what we're all doing now in pandemic.
Yeah.
So that's a whole process for women that men and male hosts did not have to factor in. They do not have to factor that in, that it takes me an extra hour to look presentable in the patriarchy.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of have my little routine at night, get ready for the show so I can have the most amount of energy, you know, and really try to bring my best self to that too. It's kind of like, I feel like I'm a professional athlete at this point.
Well, you kind of are. Do you find that the news, because you really have this job, which is all about, you really see the news in the morning and the news in the evening. Are you shocked as some days when you go on? Like, do you think I could never have imagined this kind of stuff would happen?
Every day. The week I started was the week that Donald Trump was positive with COVID-19 and in Walter Reed and taking the helicopter, you know, walking out to the helicopter and taking it. And then that was the whole week where, you know, and weekend where he drove around, waved out the car with the Secret Service. I mean, so certainly I have the moments where I'm like, I cannot believe this is real life. I mean, every morning I do some form of a rant where it's like, I feel like I'm Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther, where he's like, is this your king? Like, I feel like that every day. Every day, I'm like, because I feel, I mean, like, I feel like I'm a fairly intelligent person. I'm not the smartest person, but I feel like the way that my brain works and how I think about things, like, I think them all the way through, often to my detriment, because, you know, with COVID, I was like, people can transmit this without symptoms. So I just assume everybody's a zombie. Yeah. That's how you function. Yeah. You're like, and so, and people were like, that seems very extreme. And now doctors are like, well, asymptomatic spread is very problematic. And I'm like, I thought I was there in April. But I feel like, you know, every single day I look around and I can't believe that there's 70 plus million people who are getting duped by somebody who's not intelligent. That's the thing that actually I can't believe.
Yeah.
That people are walking into maskless rallies in the middle of a pandemic with an airborne virus that's killed, you know, more people in one day than 9/11, which fundamentally upended our whole government. And we started multiple wars as a result.
Yeah.
And also one that was sort of a euphemism for a larger ongoing forever, you know, war on terror. So I just feel like, you know, I can't believe Donald Trump was what sort of exposed America for some of the lies we tell ourselves.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
But I guess that's what how it's going to go. I mean, I think that we lie to ourselves when we say that we are exceptional in particular ways in which we are proving to ourselves in this last year, we are not.
Yeah.
And I wondered early on in the pandemic, like the messaging about masks wasn't going to work on us.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning, it was very easy to see that, oh, a mask is more so. So if you are sick, you are not transmitting it to others, meaning that the mask is a symbol of my care and concern for others.
Right.
I was like, we don't do that here.
Yeah, that didn't fly.
We're not really about that life. Yeah. Like, if you ask Americans to do something mildly inconvenient to protect their neighbor, they're going to sue them. They're not going to, like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's terrible, but it's true.
I know that, like, that's not the vast majority of us, but obviously it is a third or so. I really was concerned for us. So every day I am surprised by the just what I am seeing revealed about the American people, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the places in which we really have some work to do. Because we do have a lot of work to do. I mean, there was another case this week of a Black person killed by the police, Casey Goodson, who in Columbus, Ohio, was on his way home from a dentist appointment, stopped to get a Subway sandwich. The police were looking for a violent fugitive,
right?
Of which he was not. No criminal record, nothing. They don't know what really happened because there's no body cameras,
right? Of course,
on these police officers. And he was shot with the keys in his doorknob. They're hanging there in the photo. And they shot him multiple times, including in the back, to the point where he was holding, you know, his 5-year-old little brother found him and he still had the sandwich in his hand. I mean, I just, so it's these kinds of stories that, like, when they come back around, and they always do, that's the moment where we have to do that introspection. And I think the pandemic allowed us some space to do that this summer with the racial reckoning. I was in awe of the people who chose to risk their lives in a pandemic to protest what they knew was right. And I think, you know, that showed me that there are at least another third of us that are willing to do the hard work of getting us to the right side of many of these issues, but it's going to be a long haul here. And I also think we're going to be completely traumatized.
Oh yeah, no question.
After we sort of get to the other side of this pandemic, because I don't know that if you can have 500,000 Americans die and that not fundamentally change our psychology.
Oh, no question. I think, and also the people who are sick and have long haul side effects. I have like a kind of complicated question, but I'm curious to ask you. You know, I grew up in this white feminist world of white feminists who, like, really, they didn't, I mean, I'm going to assume they didn't know what they were doing. But, you know, I hope, that is my hope that they didn't know what they were doing. But
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, there's something I've really been needing to get off my chest lately, which is that everyone and their mother should listen to the Andre 3000 album because it lifts my spirits on a regular basis, 1000%. We all carry around different problems, big and small. And let's be honest, when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It's like this safe space where you can unload all those burdens and start figuring out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Therapy can make a difference. I know this from firsthand experience. And it's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for anyone who wants to improve their mental well-being. Therapy can help you learn coping skills. It can teach you how to set better boundaries. And it can make you be a better version of yourself.
If you're considering therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, which means it's convenient, flexible, and fits into your schedule seamlessly. Plus, getting started is as easy as filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And the best part, you can switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. So why wait? Take that first step towards a happier, healthier you with BetterHelp.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/thenewabnormal today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/thenewabnormal.
I'm curious to know, how do white feminists make it right?
That's a good question, because I too grew up in a world of white feminists. Yeah. I feel like I'm in a unique vantage point because I started writing and blogging at Feministing. That wasn't the first website I blogged for, but it was in the beginning, before I even started writing for money. And one of the things that I did intentionally is go to a place where it was about intersectional feminism and about the fact that, you know, white feminists need to understand that you can't just focus on abortion. That's not like the only issue that is relevant for women, all women, frankly, but certainly not for women of color, because if you're not talking about racism, if you're not talking about, you know, class and all of those intersections, then you're not doing it right. So white feminists, they did do a lot of work between 2016 and 2020, frankly. And I think it's been important to see the ways in which, especially since the summer, people have, I mean, I don't mind it when you're asking me for books to read, you know, people, a lot of people do that. But, you know, I think that the desire for people to become more educated on race is a step in the right direction. Like, there are some black feminists who would be like, roll their eyes and be like, I mean, now you finally you realize racism, you know, but I try to be like, okay, like I could be roll my eyes at you and say, like, it's about time.
Yeah.
But if not now, when? And I think that also I sort of use the show that I have in the morning, which is very different from the show that I have at night, because I have a co-host who is a feminist. We're partners in feminism. And she presents as white, but she has Mexican heritage on her mom's side. So we always joke that she's secretly Mexican, but she moves throughout the world as a secret white woman because her last name is McIntosh. She and I have really, I think, uncomfortable but frank conversations about even how she witnesses how different it is for me to walk around in the world in the body that I'm in. And that when we would, like, you know, do our little mini Broad City episodes walking around New York City, going to our, like, we, like, do our radio show and, like, go to our Orange Theory classes, you know, we were literally our own episode of Broad City. She would see firsthand, like, what it's like, right? She'd just be, you know, because, like, most people don't assume that two women of different races that are, like, standing next to each other are together. And so, you know, she'd watch people elbow me in the head or, like, cut me on the line. Like, there was one day where, like, I was just waiting to get breakfast. I mean, I get yelled at a lot by older white people. And so this older white woman, she just started yelling at me. And you just kind of look. And so now she flexes her white privilege and she'll yell back, right? She'll use her privilege in that moment. And I feel like if we could just all sort of be Jess McIntosh and just try to use the privilege where it's possible. And certainly Black people may appreciate it for real. If you're a white person and you see a Black person in a store or online at the grocery store, you know, getting mistreated, if you see that, be an ally in that moment. I can't tell you how many times I've been mistreated and just looked around at the other people who are pretending not to see.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we've gone too long where white Americans have pretended not to see. They pretended not to see what was really happening. They pretended not to understand what the phrase Black Lives Matter means.
Yeah.
When you know exactly what it means, because everybody's shared that Jane Elliott video at the beginning of the summer where she asked a group of white students, raise your hand if you'd like to be treated the way we treat Black people. And none of them raise their hand because you know that you don't want to be treated that way. And you know that there's a problem. And you know that, if your child could not walk and get a Subway sandwich without being killed by the police. And in addition, there is no accountability by the society because it's not just the violent act. It's also that our society deems it acceptable as a status quo that I can walk outside right now, go jogging, be mistaken for a who knows what, or just shot. And then the police know the lie to tell. They know the lie to tell to get away with it. They know the script to follow. And that's the problem. We all see what's happening. And so white feminists just sort of, they need to be about that life. They need to really lean in to the fact that racism is a problem they need to care about too. And their white sistren who are voting for herd immunity without a vaccine, because they're afraid of Black people coming to the suburbs when the virus is killing you in the suburbs and your mother and your father who are in the nursing home.
Yeah.
So it's really just about listen to Black women first, but really, you know, be more like Jess McIntosh. Use those moments where you can identify ways in which you can utilize your privilege to benefit people who don't have it. So they can get a little bit, you know, those days where Jess stands up for me or, you know, at least yells with me back at the, because normally if I'm getting yelled at by a white woman, like I'm old enough next. Maybe in my 20s, I didn't yell back. I'm nearly 40. And I was, man, if I don't have any qualms in, you know, I can sort of read someone without even cursing pretty well.
Yeah.
But it is nice to have a friend who can utilize her privilege. So I just encourage other people to find ways to do that.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. This was so good. Now I've gone over.
On that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The New Abnormal from The Daily Beast. In future episodes, we'll be talking with smart folks from The Daily Beast and beyond from media, culture, politics, and science who will help us understand what's happening to our country and the world.
We hope you'll subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app and share the show on social media. We're just getting started and don't want you to miss an episode. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm Molly Jongfest and he's the Rick Wilson. Thanks so much for listening and we'll see you again on the next episode.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.